Welcome to The Relationship Type. I'm Alex.
And I'm Patty. Look, relationships are everywhere.
And they can be, well, complicated.
So let's gab about it.
We're so excited for this episode of the podcast because today we are joined by Hadley Mendelson and Alyssa Fiorentino, editors at House Beautiful and co-hosts of the podcast Dark House. Their podcast explores beautiful homes with dark histories, whether it's true crime, paranormal activity, or both. I know I've been listening a lot this spooky season, so I'm thrilled to speak with them today. Welcome, Hadley and Alyssa.
Hi. Thank you for having us.
Hey. Yes, we're so excited. I was literally just listening to your Taylor Swift Mansion Rhode Island episode right before this, so I loved it. My mind is blown.
One of my all-time faves. I feel like it's the thing I won't shut up about this year. One of the things I won't shut up about this year.
Which I'm okay with. I encourage it. Yeah. Valid.
No, it's amazing. I feel like this is the year of Taylor Swift. Like I wasn't, now literally. I'm like looking for all content about Taylor Swift.
Good.
Awesome. Well, each week we kick things off by sharing what relationship has been central to your week this week. So we'll start with Patty first. Patty, what relationship has been central to your week?
Okay. So I have a happy one. Since we're going into all things like deep, dark, and paranormal today, I'm going to try to like keep it light. So the relationship that has been central to my week is my relationship with my best friends. My sister's bachelorette party has come and gone, which was very, I was so excited. We've been like planning it for months and months and months, and I'm the maid of honor, so I just take this job like way too seriously, and so I've carried a lot of the stress of the planning and sort of the anticipation of it all, and actually having the weekend play out, it was so beautiful. We went to Portland, Maine, which actually where Alex is, and it was like, even though it was a really rainy like shit weekend, we had a great time, and we had like, it was so special to just be with like our really close friends, and she's only 2 years older than me, so we share a lot of the same best friends, which is really special, and we just had like the most amazing weekend, to the point where when we were driving back, and it wasn't like a long drive back, thank God, but we just like were crying on the way home, like listening to Taylor Swift and like thinking about our friends. We were like, oh my God, it was so beautiful. I can't believe it's over. So luckily we have the wedding to look forward to. But
yeah,
we were like, I was feeling really, it was a mix of feeling really low that it was over, but also just like having such a full heart, like having the weekend play out so beautifully. So my best friends, I love them all. Shout out to them. They were so great. And yeah, it was such a great experience. But 10 stars or no, 5 stars, whatever the people are rating. I don't know.
The max amount of stars.
Max it out. Yeah. Okay. So Alex, I'm going to flip it over to you. What relationship has been central to your week this week?
I feel like I was really weighing what to talk about because it was not a good week. I'll say that. But what I want to say is I think my relationship with like scary movies, which I know we've talked about scary movies on this podcast before, but I think I'm like looking at them a little differently. Whereas before it was, ooh, I want this thrill. Like I want this thing I can watch to like distract myself, which I still think is true. But I just finished Haunting of Bly Manor, and then me and my husband started, I think it's called Midnight Hour or Midnight Club.
Midnight Mass?
No, it's not that one. It's the other
Midnight one. There's two.
Yeah, the other Midnight one. And it's about like kids who live at this hospice, and they're all like dying, whether it's of cancer, of some sort of terminal illness. And at first that scared me because for background, my mom passed away from cancer. So I was really nervous, like, oh no, is this going to be triggering? I didn't know this is what it was going to be about. But then I'm kind of like, you know, I feel like the fictionalized, like talking about these things is almost like helpful. And I feel like that's why we like scary stuff, for the sort of like, we can put our grief, we can put our anger at the world, we can put other things into the scary of it all. So I've really been enjoying that and taking my mind off things by watching scary stuff.
Wow. Yeah.
You're talking to the
right
girl.
I appreciate that answer, because all of Mike Flanagan is the creator of, I think, all three of the shows, Midnight Mass and then the Midnight, whatever. I'm sorry that I forget the other name. And then all of the Haunting of fill in the blanks. Yeah. And he's really good at making them entertaining, but then also helping people wrestle with some of the, like you said, just darker, scarier things, because they are as scary as something in a horror movie. So usually they're actually
scarier.
More about like grief and something about being sad than just like ghosts jumping out. But the symbolism I think is helpful because you can process things a little more in ways that you can talk about, you know?
Definitely. That's what I loved about – I don't want to spoil Bly Manor at all, but I loved how it was so deep, like a story about grief. And same with Hill House. I don't remember Hill House as much because I watched it a few years ago. But like these are stories about grief and then the scariness comes second. But you don't know that upon like first watching, which is really cool.
Right, right.
Absolutely. Even this is a bit of a different like vibe altogether, but similar in the way that the storytelling incorporates grief is I just watched the newer Haunted Mansion, Disney's Haunted Mansion, not the Eddie Murphy one. And it like it had a lot of themes of grief that I didn't realize that that would be sort of central to the whole story. And it was, I was just telling Alex, like, it was sad, but beautiful. Like, people kept telling me, oh, I cried so much during that movie. And I was like, Haunted Mansion. I was confused thinking about the Eddie Murphy one.
Like, yeah.
It was beautifully done. At least I thought it was. I really liked it. And there was a lot of themes of grief and, like, a child losing a parent, someone like around our age losing a spouse. So it was, they did a great job. I thought it was amazing.
Adding it to my list.
Yeah.
I know, seriously. Mm-hmm. Well, now I will pass it to you, Alyssa. What relationship has been central to your week?
Well, it's funny that you brought up a bachelorette party, Patty, because I was DMing with one of our listeners and she said that her bachelorette party was in Salem, Massachusetts. I was like, that is genius. Like, I got to steal that. We got to do that. That sounds so fun. Yeah. So I was going to say our relationship with our listeners. And I think that's been not just this week, but the last 2 months since we've launched our third season. Last year for season two, we started an Instagram account around Dark House, at Dark House Podcast. Shout out if you want to give us a follow. And that's been really cool because it opened up a line of communication that we didn't really have. Like, you can't respond to an Apple Podcast review. So there's not really a back and forth there, even if you can receive the feedback. But with Instagram, we're able to, like, you know, reply to people's comments and obviously DM back and forth. And so we've had that open, obviously, since last year and during the off season, but it really picks up, you know, when we're actively publishing new episodes and just like hearing their thoughts on these stories that we're putting out. Because Hadley and I are living with these stories for months and months before they reach our audience, and we're obsessing over them and different parts or different like sound design elements that we're adding that we're really excited for people to hear. So then to actively be able to chat with them about, you know, their own reactions to certain parts of the stories and things like that, that's been really meaningful to us. And I feel like also, Patty, you can relate. You know, my background was in audience development, brand strategy, which really is rooted in social media marketing. And I feel like the feedback you get when you're working in that type of role, it's almost always like, oh, the intern's doing social again. Like, it's never really positive.
Forever the intern. Yeah.
Yeah, like a thankless job. And you're kind of on the front lines to negativity and complaints rather than, you know, the opposite. So the kind of feedback that we receive from listeners, whether it is an interview or, you know, like I said, on Instagram, it's so rewarding. And it's something I never thought even possible, I guess, because a little scarred from like doing social for so long. So just having that relationship has been really meaningful across the board, but especially right now during our season.
That's so beautiful, especially since, like, of course, I so relate to the fact that, like, working in social media, especially when you're sort of marketing a brand or a publication and, you know, stories, it can be really thrilling to have such a large audience, but you miss that sort of community building piece that I think like in doing, you know, having now like an Instagram specifically for the podcast, you get to build that community. You get to be in that community every day. And it's just such a rewarding, like you said, exciting experience. It's like, it makes you think of the old days of using social media and sort of like the, you know, it really brings the fun back into it. So I love that. I feel like your listeners must be such a cool group of people, especially
they are
going
they
to Salem are. For a batch. Like, that's incredible.
I know. I love that.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, more people need to do that. But also just, you know, like they take the time to send us their stories, their own personal kind of like spooky stories or weird experiences, or, you know, if there's a house that they've been to, they'll send us pictures and videos. And I'm like, it's just so cool that they'll take the time to do that and they want to chat with us. And there's even people that I'm like, the real regulars, we're really getting to know them. I'm like, I can't wait to hear what so-and-so has to say about this week's episode. So that's been really important to us.
That's so special. You guys got to throw some sort of Halloween bash in your future so that everyone can meet up. That sounds amazing. Maybe in Salem, who knows?
Yeah, exactly.
Salem needs to call you, basically. Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah. And Hadley, okay, so what about you? What relationship has been central to your week?
I think my interpretation of this question is a little more abstract. I grew up in California, and so I'm not really used to these like visible changes every season. And I know people who are transplants the opposite way will talk about how it's just Groundhog's Day every day. It's the same weather over and over, and they kind of like this change. And I think my relationship to change, both seasonal ones and then also just bigger life transitions, has been on my mind a lot this week. I do think part of it has to do with like dips in weather and me like kind of feeling whiplash with like sweating in my sweater right now. But then like this morning I needed like 8 coats on when I went out to get a coffee. So I think in general too, I always get kind of like one long Sunday scary in August. So kind of like the last month of like right before a change, the anticipation of it is when I start to feel the wigglies. And so I think this week that's been on my mind a lot, but I'm also trying to be more actively grateful for taking stock of things that I've outgrown and carrying them with me, but then also like, you know, not necessarily being excited for the unknown, because I don't think I'll ever be excited for that. I just am not comfortable in that space. But also just trying to embrace those a little more, and then leaning on my, this is less abstract now, my relationships that are familiar throughout those changes. Not necessarily like super old friendships. I mean, Alyssa and I have known each other now for, 4 or 5 years, right?
2018, I would say. I'm not good at math, so like 5-ish, yeah.
A long time, but I don't feel like we really got to strengthen and deepen our bond until we were working on Dark House, and every day it feels more and more like a sister, honestly. And so being able to lean on her to get through these difficult times, and hopefully vice versa too, has been really special. So yeah, change and life's seasons, especially not being in California anymore, and then also the friendships that help me get through those.
I love that, and I have to ask, because I talk about it every episode, I'm also from California. What part are you from?
I'm from San Francisco.
Oh, nice. I'm from San Diego, and my husband's from San Jose.
Nice. Okay. We just did an episode about the Winchester Mystery House, which is in San Jose.
I'm waiting to listen to that one until I'm in San Jose. I can't wait.
Good idea. I love that. I love that, doing it with the right setting. And then my aunt is from San Diego, so I've spent a lot of time there.
Oh my gosh, awesome. I love the I love meeting people who live on the East Coast now who are from California. Like, it's actually
it's the like a little life raft. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's amazing. Well, that's awesome. Yeah. It's amazing you say that, Hadley, because Alex literally said that like recently and has been grappling with the same sort of difficulty with the seasons changing. Yeah. Like, I'm like, that was so spooky because Alex, like, I feel like you literally,
when you said that, my brain was like, oh my God.
Well, you're in good company. I feel like a lot of people probably relate to it too. I mean, totally. I have to order like an SAD light. I'm like, okay, winter is coming.
Yes. Wait, do those work? Like, do people say those work?
I don't know. I will get back to you though and let you know once I test it out. I feel like a little bit might be placebo, but placebo is also a legit thing. So
I'll take it. We'll see. I'll take anything, honestly. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, at this point. Well, we're so excited to have you both here, and we'd love to dive into your relationship with paranormal and haunted houses. So we want to first ask, how did Dark House even come to be?
Great question. It's honestly, and like Hadley said, like, it's been in 5-ish years that we've kind of been working together. So like, thinking back to the very beginning, it is a bit of a blur. I remember, so my role was, I don't remember what the title was, but like I said, sort of audience development, a major focus on like, you know, how do we take this 125-year-old shelter brand and grow its audience in a new way. And, you know, podcast has been coming up for a while, and this was 2018 when I started my job. So I was definitely listening to a bunch of podcasts, thinking a lot about that, like, oh, that's a space we should get into. But in my mind, with interior design, and especially with House Beautiful, it's very visual. And so to me, I was like, it's going to be hard to get people to engage with, you know, us talking about like these things that you really want to see, you know, it sometimes you even want to just feel it, like, I got to go feel that fabric you're talking about, whatever, you know, so that didn't immediately feel right for what I was like noodling on. Then the cut piece about the Watcher House in Westfield, New Jersey came out. And I remember reading that and being like, this could have been a mini series podcast. And then from there, thinking like, well, but there are a lot of houses, not this exact same story, but a lot of houses that have backstories, either they're haunted or they're creepy or they're abandoned or, you know, what have you. And then, you know, that was starting to kind of like bubble. And then, I mean, Hadley, her background or her role in at House Beautiful at the time was doing a lot of like SEO content. And so she'd be updating the Halloween stories, like the most haunted houses in every state and things like that. And so then it kind of just like hit this crossroads. We vaguely remember there being some type of pitch meeting about Halloween content where it kind of came out that we both were into spooky stuff, like more than the average person. And then it kind of spiraled from there. It took us a while. I'm not going to lie. Like, you know, the idea kind of bubbled up end of 2018, early 2019, but it took a while to be able to carve out the time, come up with a plan for, are we really going to make this thing? Because everybody was aligned. We all wanted it to get made. It's just not that simple. So it took us a while to get it off the ground. But in 2021, we finally did. And we started out as a limited series with 5 episodes. And, you know, luckily for us, we had the right idea. We had a feeling like this is going to be really like a great broad topic that a lot of people can enjoy, and we got great feedback. And so then we've been continuing from there, which has been really exciting. And now Hadley and I focus pretty much full time on the show, which has been great.
I was going to add to something that I feel like was a really organic outcome was just the way that we didn't necessarily in our first meeting know what the structure of the show was going to be, but somehow we like crafted this really specific structure that didn't feel at all forced, which is lucky because you never really know how something's going to resonate until you do it. And it's really hard to craft a narrative, I think, in a way that's entertaining and also impactful and concise enough. I will say sometimes we're long-winded, but packaging it, you know, within like an hour and 20 minutes so that it's not never ending, because sometimes people just want that companion and during their commute and they can't revisit it that frequently. So I feel like being able to come up with a structure that was unique and that we didn't see in the space otherwise, tapping different experts in the field that also, when I say in the field too, it's like, what field? Are we talking about just like ghost hunters or what? And in reality, there are like tons of different professionals that we've worked with, like a professor of psychology and cognitive science, as well as folklore specialists, because kind of what you were saying earlier, Alex, the genre itself touches on so many different meaningful other like subgenres that you wouldn't necessarily connect with them. But I think just goes to show how much ghost stories can actually become relevant to daily life, even though you wouldn't think that off the bat.
Definitely. You mentioned how like you both are sort of like this more than the average person. And I was listening to your interview, I forget his name, but with the person from Boogeyman. And one of you asked him this question of like, what draws him to the genre? And I loved that question. I'm curious, what draws you to haunted houses?
Alyssa, do you want me to start with that?
Yeah, go ahead. You start this one.
Okay. I think for me, I remember when I was a little kid, I got in trouble. I forget if I've told this story or not before, but I got in trouble because I started a rumor that the little girls who transferred from our school were trapped inside this little ledge at the end of a – basically, we would sit on it when they were doing roll call, and you could hear wind blowing through it. It was like a little plastic thing to make it – if you bumped your head, you wouldn't get hurt. And I said that those whistling sounds were the voices of the little girls trapped in there because this one teacher I didn't like was punishing them in there. So obviously I got in trouble for that. But I always go back to that story because I feel like that kind of symbolizes, one, my propensity to tell stories, I'll call them that. But also because I think that it's fun. I remember there were crowds of people gathered around as I was telling this story, and it obviously spun from there into some really big fantasy drama that was a good story. But I think for me, it comes back to that. It's not necessarily that I always say this to Alyssa, I don't know if I believe in the paranormal or not. I feel very ambivalent, and it depends greatly on my setting. If I'm somewhere creepy or I'm hearing noises in an old house, or if it's broad daylight and we're sitting here chit-chatting, I'll probably say I don't in that moment. But I feel like I've always been drawn to that kind of story because I think they're really fun to tell. They create connection, and everybody also always chimes in with their own story, so you can connect really easily with people across different cultures or backgrounds. And again, it's not even about whether or not you believe in what happens in the afterlife. It's just about connecting and processing those different ideas together. So I feel like that's probably what draws me. And then I think I also probably liked the attention of all the people listening to the story when I was a kid. So hopefully I've matured a little though since.
The range. I love it.
Literally. I feel like this is something too that I just like love about Hadley and I, and like our dynamic is we just have such different takes. Like for me personally, and I don't know if this has to do with like growing up in Massachusetts, but like I always was a witch kid. And by a witch kid, I mean like one of those kids who would watch like Halloween Town or Hocus Pocus and actually think like, okay, when I turn 13, that's when the powers are kicking in. Like I am a witch, like whatever. So I kind of always just had that like appeal to any type of witch media. I would even say like, I don't actively watch horror movies. I got to be honest with you guys. Cause I'm just like, I don't like to be scared. So I was never into straight up ghosts or haunted houses like that in that younger space. It was really just like magic and witchcraft. Cause that's a little, it was just more palatable, but
it's empowering too. I think that's an important note as a young girl.
And just as somebody who's like spent quite a bit of time just off in mental la la land, like that's a good space for me to be, you know what I mean? believing in magic, but also like I remembered recently, like core memory, but with our neighbors every fall, our next door neighbors, we would like literally try to build the haunted houses in our backyards. It was never, obviously, like it was barely, we had like a bucket and filled it with dirty water and we're like, this is the toilet, like whatever. Like we barely got it off the ground, of course, but that was always this, I don't know, like mini business venture that we were into. And so maybe it has to do with the side of like what you're saying, Hadley, like the storytelling angle. Maybe for me, it was like the visual and like the experiential part of it. So yeah, I've just always been sort of drawn to that. But then I think the interest really sparked. I mean, it does come back to storytelling. I remember reading that cut story about the Watcher and just being enthralled, and it like takes a lot for me to read a story anywhere but online, frankly. Like there's so much, you know, you guys know, like there's so much that gets published every single day. Mm-hmm. For something to really grip you like that and then kind of stick with you, that stood out to me. And then like I said, just thinking about all of the houses that have kind of really interesting backstories like that. And so now it's kind of like I can't drive by a house that's a little run down without being like, huh, I wonder what's happening there. Even just like, does somebody live there or not? Because how are they living there with like smashed windows and things like that? Isn't it freezing cold in there? Like what's going on? And so now I feel like everything is kind of filtered through the dark house lens.
Absolutely. And thinking about how it you know, it truly goes back for both of you to childhood. Like you had an early fascination with whether it's magic or the paranormal. And I do think that growing up in Massachusetts as well, and having Halloween be such a, it's such a big calendar marker. And, you know, I don't know what town you grew up in, but being from like a very small New England-y suburban town, right, like everyone's running around. It looked like Hocus Pocus. And
yeah, to Hadley's point, like the leaves, when they change, and like I definitely vibe with seasonal depression as well. Even if you grew up with the season changing, it can be very, I'm a summer girl.
Yeah.
But the last few days I've been waking up and like if it's a really nice sunny morning and then I'm seeing all the colors of like the trees behind our neighbor's houses, I'm like, this is insane. Yeah. And it literally just like you are dropped into a scene of Hocus Pocus, which is just, I mean, but then also it lasts 2 seconds. Like give it a week and all the leaves will be gone. Trust me.
Truly. And that's why it's like great to savor it as well. And you know, like coming into this project, I imagine that it completely changes the way that you view houses. If you're like on a road trip or something, I recently drove to upstate New York and there were so many homes that looked like, did you guys see Practical Magic?
Of course. Oh, yeah.
Multiple times.
I need to see it.
Yeah. So that house, iconic. Obviously. And there were so many houses that looked like that. And I was like, what is going on in there? Like, I hope, I hope they're brewing something. I hope there's like a seance or two. I don't know. But it's so interesting.
I feel like it's a really cool way to get to know cities too in general. Like in San Francisco, it's not the New England vibe at all. But the whimsy of all of the intricate Victorian designs and the boldness that regular people will exhibit by just painting. I mean, I've seen houses that are like lavender, yellow, I mean, and they all look really beautiful. And if you look closely, you'll see the little gargoyles, which can be sinister, but usually are just looking at it more lightly. I think it's really just whimsical, and the turrets and all of that. I think I texted you this, Alyssa, when I was home last, but I want there to be an app where you can scan any house and it just basically is a mini dark house episode and tells you everything about the history of it, and whether it's the design stuff, because I could geek out on that all day, or the inhabitants and all the people who've lived there and what it was like during each era. I don't know who would use this app besides me, but
so many people.
I know, I want it.
With AI, I mean, we can't be that far off from this.
Yeah,
but
just print a QR code and stick it, like put a sticker on the fire hydrant outside. That is so cool. That needs to happen. Oh my gosh.
Anyone listening?
Yeah, truly. Yes. Any app developers out there?
Yeah, get on it.
Yeah, please. So, okay, going back just slightly, because you guys spoke about how you had the idea for a bit, you were sitting on it, and it's kind of hard to sort of like, you know, dipping into audio, it is a whole different world from what we're used to. Digital, you know, you're pumping content out. It's very fast paced. And with audio, there's a lot of planning that has to go in. There's a lot of editing, post-production. But when you pitched the idea of the podcast first to, I assume it was like the editorial team, or did you guys come forth with the idea? And was it like an easy sell, or were they like, ooh, we need some convincing, like what's the connection? Mm-hmm.
We pitched it. I feel like the very first reaction was sort of like, no, just because it's, you know, it's not a space that we were in yet. It's like, you know, complicated. It's like anybody who can grab a mic and make a podcast, but not the podcast that we were trying to make. You know what I mean? This was going to require research and, you know, crafting this entire narrative around each episode. And like you said, a lot of post-production. And I think just also, you know, in our business, it's about, you know, the exchange of like, well, how can you advertise against that? And I think something that I'm even coming to like learn more about now is just like when, you know, technically we're in the true crime space. And so there are a lot of keywords that, you know, somebody might not want associated with their brand. So I think there's that element of, you know, brand safety. And then just from our perspective as a brand, like, is this something that, you know, the goal was obviously to bring in, you know, more members of the audience. So the existing audience, not necessarily like would they like it, but what if they think it's crazy? You know, like what if this is kind of like risking our reputation and everything that the brand stood for before? So I think there was just like slight hesitation just at first, because again, this was kind of like unknown in terms of anything that we were used to as a team, and the things that we know how to create. But then the more we were like, well, but think about it. Like, think about it as an idea. Then it became a thing where it was like everybody internally who we spoke with about it was like, yeah, that's a good idea. And so then everybody was kind of on board, but it was still this issue of like, okay, so like figure out how to make it. And it's just, yeah, it's not that simple, especially knowing like, you know, we knew pretty much from the jump that Hadley and I should be the co-host because of that natural interest. But then it was like, how do you do your job and then also take on the job of not only co-hosting, but like figuring out how to make this podcast? So that I think is really what held us up, was just, you know, we had been given, you know, a bit of a green light of like, okay, like look into it, figure out what the next steps are. And then it was just like, the next steps have to wait because I have all these other things I have to do for my own role first. So.
Absolutely. That's such a testament to your creativity. And I'm so glad that you guys pushed for it and ended up going through with this, because it's, I think it's remarkable, having worked at a Hearst brand before. I know that it can be really difficult to get creative projects off the ground. And you are met with that constant sort of like killjoy of, okay, well, can we advertise? Or like, what's the SEO? Like, you know, how can we figure this out? And who's going to execute? And it can be, it's like so difficult to sort of persevere with a creative idea when you have all these things sort of all these obstacles in the way. So I think it's amazing. So absolutely like inspired by the way that you guys took this on. And I feel like it's just going to keep growing. I think it's so uniquely brilliant. And it, to me, it makes so much sense that House Beautiful, who is like the authority of beautiful houses, would dip their toe into something like this. And why not? Like haunted houses, haunted. I mean, there are a bajillion haunted mansion movies. There's, I think, like a curated Netflix queue all about like haunted spaces and places. So I think you guys hit the nail on the head. Like, this is amazing.
Thank you. I mean, I think I also think it's a testament to our editorial director, Joe Saltz, who, Patty, I'm sure you worked with working at Hearst. But I think somebody else might have been like, no way. Like, you guys are crazy. That's not what this brand does. We're not going to try that. But, you know, she really gave us the space to just try. You know what I mean? And because I think that's
like take a risk.
Yeah, there's a lot of bravery in that. In, you know, we all agreed, like, we'll just start with five because just in case it doesn't work out. And so having a leader who believes in us and our idea was also just like really essential to getting this thing off the ground. But also, like I said, you know, hearing from other team members who were like, you guys, this is a good idea. Like, that was really important for us to be able to have that initial support. I think if people had been like, you know, like if there was any sort of like negativity towards the idea, I don't think we would have had the strength, honestly, because it was really hard that first season of five episodes. We lost our minds that
I always
summer.
Do you guys watch The Office?
Yes. Yeah.
Anyone? Okay. There's this one episode I always think back to when Michael Scott created the Michael Scott Paper Company, and he and Pam had to oscillate between who's the hype man and then who's the one who's having a meltdown. And that's Alyssa and I.
Literally.
Every hour essentially is taking turns doing that. So I feel like having a partner throughout all of it was absolutely integral to me not completely spiraling. And trusting, I think that's a big part of it too, is getting the trust of our coworkers. Mm-hmm. I mean, we have a lot of creative autonomy, and I'm always blown away that they trust us so much to do this. And that makes me trust myself more. And also, obviously, trusting Alyssa with everything, I think, is just so helpful. Without that, it's with any relationship, right? You need to be able to believe in each other.
Yeah, because it was like everybody's reputation that's on the – like, we all worked together on this brand. It wasn't just like, well, if this doesn't work, then like Alyssa and Hadley, like, you guys stink, like, whatever. It was everybody. You know, everybody's kind of had a similar stake in what this would mean for the brand. But we've been feeling really excited this season just to really hit that overlap. Somebody left a review that was like, thanks, House Beautiful, for making this such an interesting podcast, or whatever it was. And I was like, this is it. Like, this is exactly why we were doing this in the first place. Like, obviously Hadley and I have this interest in, and now more than ever, we believe in the show for the community that we've built. But it is important to have a legacy brand branch out and try new things and build out their audience in a new way. And so that's just, this is nerdy, I guess, but from the background that we come from professionally, that's another huge bonus to be able to see that overlap and get that name out there.
Also, just nobody asked, but I'm gonna share a little piece of advice. I think anytime that you want to start something new, whether it's a podcast or whatever, if you're resourceful about the skill set that you already have, because everybody has one, it doesn't matter what your age is, you're good at something. And so I think for me, my immediate skill set that I was dipping into was the SEO element of my title. And so figuring out how to optimize content in a way that's organic, because I was trained in editorial right as SEO was becoming a thing. And so I've never been able to be an editor without thinking about that little puzzle piece. And I think a lot of people might see it as an obstacle, but for me, I've always seen it as actually kind of an advantage, because one, you know that people are already interested in this thing. If you know that there's a really high search volume, and in this case it's not really like a search volume, it's more like an interest level or something, and I think Alyssa's background was slightly different, but for both of us it was, okay, what technical skill sets do we have and how do we utilize them here? And I think anyone can use that mindset to try to make something like this come to life, because there's going to be a lot of learning curves, and
oh, yeah,
that's a good thing.
I would just piggyback on all of that, Hadley, and just like adding to, you know, the story of how this came about. We didn't go into it being like, we just have this idea and we think maybe it'll work. Like we had numbers to back it up. And like I said, we had these stories that Hadley had already written about, like the most haunted house in every state. So we had evidence that there's interest, like she just said. But then on the note of like thinking when you want to start something new, thinking about the skills you do have, don't be afraid of the skills you don't have, because we quite literally had zero podcasting skills. And I would even say public speaking skills. I mean, our first five episodes, I re-listened to like 5 minutes of one the other day, and I was like, I have to shut this off. Like, we got a lot of flack for how much we would say like and and at first I was like, what is everybody talking about? Like, it's not a big deal. Now I listen to it and I'm like, oh my god, everybody's right. Like, it was too much. I mean, but that's something that we've been working on the fly. So, you know, like, we're every season we try to get better and better, you know, not using those filler words. I guess vocal fry is still an issue for us, whatever. But
I think till death do us part, it will be an issue for me, because I just have a Valley Girl accent and that's okay.
Yeah. And it is what it is. Take it or leave it. But I think don't let something hold you back if it's a skill you don't have yet, because you can work on it as you go. As long as it's like a, like, I mean, an essential skill would be like, can you read? And because if you're not going to be able to like read off whatever notes you have, then that's obviously a problem. But like realistic issues, they're usually things you can work on as you're going along.
I'm so glad you guys shared this advice too, because I was thinking, I was like, should I ask for the advice? But that's such a perfect segue, because truly, like, I think there's nothing more dangerous than an SEO and a social editor combined. Like, the skill sets are everything. And so it really is like such a wonderful combination of technical skills, but also curiosity. That's a soft skill, like having passion, having interest, right. Like, you know, wanting to talk to people. And those, the things like the voice training and the filler words, we struggle with that. Everyone struggles with that. It is what it is. Mm-hmm. Your own worst critic. But it, at the end of the day, it's like you have this thing that you both built and created. And I think that the brand as a whole is better for it. So again,
thank you.
Huge shout out to you both. And yeah, and from there, we're going to shift gears a bit into the paranormal. So Alex, you want to kick us off with some questions?
Oh, yeah. I'm so excited for this. And you both touched on this a little bit, but I really want to get more into it. So do you believe in ghosts and the paranormal? And how has that kind of shifted too over the years?
I can take this one, Hadley. I feel like you already touched a little bit on being a skeptic. I failed to mention that, like, I definitely believe in ghosts. And I've had multiple experiences seeing ghosts. When I was little, I would see like full apparitions, or at least on two occasions I did. And I could describe them to you like to this day. But as I've gotten older, I can't see like a full, or I haven't seen a full form anymore. Usually it's just like a black flash. Mm-hmm. So for me, it's never been a question of believing. But again, we balance each other out in this way.
Every time she says this though, I'm like, there's something behind me and now I'm believing in them. So,
but like, we'll come to the table and occasionally I will take things in too far of a woo-woo direction and she'll reel me back in, and, you know, vice versa. Like, I'm able to creep her out, you know, with a couple little lines about, you know, my experiences. So it's nice. And I think it's also important because, you know, if you had two people who were both all in, like, we believe, we see, like, the show would be kind of just very different than what it is. So.
Wait, do you feel comfortable sharing those, that two ghost stories you said?
Yeah. We've also tried to sprinkle them in some of our episodes. But the thing is like, as we've honed the show and kind of the structure of each episode, and also, like Hadley said, we are very long-winded. And, like, the more research we do, the harder it is to even make a minute of room for other stories. But, yeah, so I'm in the childhood bedroom where like these stories happened, but basically it was just the middle, both times it was just the middle of the night, and I used to sleep facing the wall on my stomach, and so I actively remember waking up, flipping over facing the other wall, like into my bedroom. And the first one was this guy, and it was actually, I knew who it was our neighbor's cousin who had very recently passed away from one of those really weird, like, horrible strains of the flu. This was in like the early 2000s. And my bedroom door opens into the room, and it's right, like, it's on a corner, and then on the other side of the corner is my closet door. So if, like, my bedroom door opens, you could, like, stand in front of my closet door in that, like, little space. And he was standing, so halfway visible. He's standing in front of my closet, but my door was open, so he was, like, kind of peering out from behind the bedroom door. And he had a hat on. I just, like, remember it was, like, jeans and a t-shirt, like, very simple outfit. And that was really it. Like, I saw it. I knew who it was. And then I just turned back over and went back
to sleep. What did you feel?
But I think because, you know, like, I was young. I swear to God, you guys, like, I feel like my brain didn't really start. I feel like I've had the wool over my eyes for at least 25 years. I'm not kidding. I feel like I was very young, so I didn't really think a ton of it in the moment. And also, I was very much half asleep. So, like, that's the other thing. I definitely didn't feel, like, scared. I think that's probably the thing that most people are wondering. But it was just like, okay, back to sleep. And then I think in the morning I was like, oh, interesting. Like, why, what was he doing here? I think my first thought was just like, I better tell my mom because so she can tell our neighbor. And then the next time was a very similar experience, was sleeping on my stomach facing the wall, flipped over in the middle of the night. And there was this, the little girl. I mean, she very much looked like Emily Banks, the little girl in Hocus Pocus. Like white American Girl doll type nightgown with the pink lace thingy and the collar, and like a little bonnet. And she was like crouched next to my dresser,
like the crouch.
In my hamper. So not like in a creepy crouching position, just like that was just
kind
of like
how. But see, that's
how
we're different.
Sitting.
Like, you're not scared. Yeah. I'm so afraid of like a presence in my space.
As an adult, to think about it, I'm like, she's a little scary to me because I didn't know who she was. I don't know who she was. And, you know, Patty, being from Massachusetts, there's a lot of history here. She could have been anybody. Like, and this house was new construction when my parents built it. This is the only place I've ever lived. But I think the land, quite frankly, is very much not new, very active. There are noises in our house all the time. And actually, I just moved back, like, officially, like, a week ago. And since I've been back, the lights have been flickering weird. My mom's iPad is, like, the light levels have been going, like, up and down on her at random. Actually, all of the lights on one side of the house went out the other night. Like, just weird stuff. Oh my gosh. My mom's like, I think Alyssa brought stuff back with her, which could have happened. I had my first trip to California a couple weeks ago. And just on the subject of dark house being having such broad appeal to people, I was with two of my closest friends and one of their boyfriends, and it was our first time even meeting this boyfriend. And literally the second we got in the rental car, it was like, okay, where are we going? We went to 10,050 Cielo Drive, where Sharon Tate was murdered. That's not the address that's not the house number anymore, and the original house is knocked down. But we were all like on a mission, ready to go to see this house. Like, and then from there, we went to like Marilyn Monroe's grave, and we just did a spooky tour of LA. And I'm like, I didn't even have to push this on anyone. We were all in alignment that we want to go do this. And that, I think, kind of just speaks volumes to everybody can have an interest in this. And it also like doesn't really matter what level of freaked out you get to, because some people enjoy being scared. Others are just like, I'm not scared. I'm just fascinated. So yeah, for me, I don't get that creeped out. There was one time, not to derail, then I'll let Hadley tell her side of the story, but I was on a work trip for House Beautiful, and I was in a hotel, and I was leaving to go get dinner, and I walked past the bathroom, and there was like a shadow figure. It was definitely male, and I jumped like 10 feet in the air because I just wasn't expecting it.
Yeah.
And I think there was sort of like a negative feeling, and then I think it was before that even happened, or maybe it was later the next day, whatever. But there was a speaker in the room. It was like one of those cool, like it looks like a guitar amp. And I don't think it was a radio, but it just turned on and started playing something random. And then I wasn't playing from my phone. So I thought that was really weird.
Yeah.
So I definitely think that hotel room was haunted. But and that was like more of like a spooky experience. But I would say most of my personal experiences seeing stuff are just, they weren't scary. It's just like, oh, okay, somebody's here. Like,
Well, it seems you're very tapped in, Alyssa, to like the – okay, so I believe in spirits and ghosts okay. and such, and I don't know if I explained this correctly, but I feel like there's like a veil – between like our world and their world. Alex and I joked about there must be like laws in the ghost world that they break all the time.
Totally.
But there's totally. Like, and around yeah. this time specifically, so I'm not surprised that you're probably seeing a lot of activity. Scorpio season, fall, autumn, like right. All Hallows Eve, Day of the Dead. Thin. Everything's very thin. Like the veil is eclipse thin season. Between eclipse season. So, but I feel like you have sort of this like extra power, like you're dialed in.
I concur. I'm definitely a little psychic. I also, yes. like I said, you know, I can tell you, I'll admit when I turned 13, I didn't like my fingers weren't sparkling with power or anything like that. But I definitely do think I still think I'm a witch. I still think I have powers. And we would joke about this at work quite often of like, oh, like she's going to do something witchy and then she'll come up with some like, you know, whatever. Maybe we needed like a
traffic winning story.
Yeah, some type of copy thing. But I just think that was part of like the natural draw is just always having this like pull.
Yeah.
And I think when I think back to like, why would my neighbor's cousin have appeared in my room?
Right.
Like why my room? Why wouldn't you go to your own relative's house if you were trying to send a message? And in my mind, I'm like, well, what if on the ghost side, it's like Google Maps and they can look and see the closest person who has access or whatever right. you want to call
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
And so he just was like, well, that's where I'm going to go because that's as close as I can get to their house.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? Like, this is how my crazy brain works.
And she'll tell her mom in the morning or something.
Yeah.
Like maybe
yeah. And they don't even – I imagine they can't even guarantee that. We've talked about, like, spiritual currency, like what kind of – what can they trade in to make an appearance to somebody? Like, I think about these things all the time, but I imagine that like he couldn't have guaranteed by appearing to me that I would have said something,
right.
but I did. So hopefully the message got across. But I don't know. These are things that we obviously don't have answers to, but they fascinate me.
I was going to say, do you remember how your mom had reacted the next morning when you told her?
Barely. And you know what? When I was getting ready to tell this story for Dark House, I Googled, you know, I wanted to know what the strain of flu it was. And we were kind of like Googling all that and then double checking his age. And then I asked, I was like, so did you tell them? Like, you remember me telling you, right? And like, and I can't remember even what she said to me like 2 years ago about it. I think she if she didn't tell them right away, she had told them since. But I think, I don't know. I'm like, imagine being a mom and I wasn't that old. I must've been under 10 and imagine that you wake up in the morning. Cause I went to her bedroom to like, it wasn't like she was already awake. I remember waking her up. At least that's how I remember it.
Yeah.
To say all this, like imagine being like, woken up by your kid saying something weird like that. I don't know. How do you respond to that? But she's into this stuff too. So she, I'm sure, took it in stride. But it's interesting.
And Hadley, what were you about to say about the hotel?
I was just going
to
say, yeah, so this is hard for me because oftentimes I won't see an actual – one time I did, but – usually it's more in my imagination. And so that's why I oftentimes think it's literally my imagination. But the feelings I get will be strong enough where I'm convinced it's not just in my head. For example, one time my mom was visiting and she always stays in weird old hotels in LA. It's always the Biltmore. We just released an episode about it. And I never liked the feeling I had when I was in there. And it could be because architecturally I just felt like it was claustrophobic or something. I don't know. But there's one in Midtown in New York that she would stay in. I forget the name of it right now. But she ran out to get a coffee and I was staying with her while I was working at Hearst. So I was going to walk to the office and I took a shower before. And when I was in the shower, I just suddenly felt really exposed and violated and there was no reason for it. I didn't feel like triggered by anything. Like it was completely random. And I felt like there was this like I had like an image of a – it wasn't a precise image. I couldn't see specific features, but I felt like there was this like shorter man who felt really round, like trying to be near me. And that sounds honestly delusional, right? At least that's like
no.
what I think.
No.
I know to you, well, I'm in a safe space, so it's not. I feel like it could have easily been me just – when I'm groggy, I feel like my imagination is much more robust, we'll say. But I also feel like maybe that's something that was paranormal and I just couldn't explain it. And when my mom, I stopped my shower. I still had like conditioner in my hair and I opened the door and I waited for my mom to get back to finish. And she, I don't think I even told her because it sounded crazy, but I like felt like I needed to like trust my gut and was kind of an autopilot when that happened. So I've had a few experiences like that, that scare me because it doesn't always feel like a nice energy. But I also just think not knowing is what might make it not nice. Mm-hmm. I'm undecided there on that.
Totally. And that feeling of being groggy, I think there's something with that where when you're tired or in like a sleep cycle, you're more prone to
like vulnerable to it.
Definitely. Yeah. Me and Patty were talking about this in our last recorded episode, I think, where like there's something like the veil is like thinned when you're like falling asleep or groggy or tired or whatever.
Right.
That's interesting.
Should I tell my upstate story, Alyssa?
Yeah.
Okay. Because it's also in the middle of the night. So my boyfriend and I, our first trip we took together, this was back in, I think, 2020. And we went upstate to Accord, New York. Is it Accord? Accord? I'm not sure. But that region, really great. We love it. We go every year now. But we rented an Airbnb. I don't know if – is it okay that I'm saying Airbnb?
Oh, yeah.
Specifically? Okay. So we rented an Airbnb and it was too big for us. It was during COVID too, so things were a lot more affordable. And that seemed like a good idea at first, but then it – I don't know, big spaces, just two people is a little – now I'm like, thank God we were still on our good behavior, like opening night, trying to be our best selves for each other. Because if we went now, I'd be like, I'm not staying here. I'm terrified. I can't do this. I can't have fun. But anyway, we go there. The first weird thing that happened was he by accident bolted the door, but it had one of those padlocks that's more modern on the front. So you don't want to lock both of them or you're locked out. But I, again, was in like good behavior crisis mode. So I somehow found a door that was kind of, it was an old farmhouse. It was a bit bloated, the entrance. And somehow I like broke into this back door easily, which was good because then it didn't ruin our weekend and we got back inside the house. But also then I was like, okay, anyone can break in. And so I was a little on edge as we were falling asleep later that night. And he acted like he was fine. Oh, also, there were so many children's rooms throughout. There was this one closet that just had a lone light bulb hanging from the ceiling and a Victorian photo of a little girl. And then there was like a bolted stairwell up into an attic. And I didn't explore that. Normally I would want to, but I was just like, something feels off. And we're falling asleep. It's the middle of the night. And I felt really frozen for some reason. I couldn't explain why, but I like couldn't sleep. And then my boyfriend was like sat upright. He like bolted upright. And I was like, what's wrong? And he was like, did you not hear that? And I was like, no, but I just couldn't sleep. And he said that he heard a really high-pitched, just like blood-curdling scream from outside. God. And so he like got up to look out because he was worried that there was like somebody got hit by a car, something. And so he looked out there and there was nothing. And again, I didn't hear it, but I had woken up like a little bit after him. So I thought maybe that's why I woke up, but I just didn't realize I had heard it. We went back to bed. I was terrified, but the rest of the weekend went well, whatever. We're still together. Things are good. But I said, you know, I'm really curious about the house across the road from here because it was a country road. And I said, can we just peer in before we leave? And I swear to God, some higher self was preventing me from doing that earlier in the weekend because if I had, I would have been so freaked out. Anyway, I like look close to the through the windows of this farmhouse and there is this mannequin sitting at the upright, like kind of at a desk with a wig on and Victorian era clothing.
Oh my God.
And I took a video of it. So I got the reveal on camera, which is amazing, like pat on the back to my former self. But there were so many orbs and I'm not really sure what the science behind like the orbs is. I think some people try to explain it away, but I was terrified. And it turned out it was a museum about this old schoolhouse. But I've gone back every year since and it's never open. But there's just all of this all of these like replicas or maybe they're original pieces. I don't know, antiques. But I swear to God something happened in that schoolhouse and that probably like the principal or schoolmaster lived in the one that I was staying in. I don't know.
Oh
but
my God.
Yeah.
Like
really
immediate
scary.
No. Like immediately I'm out. That is horrifying.
Like, Alyssa, would you be scared in that moment, or would you be like, oh, it's just...
It depends. I will say, like, I've stayed in an Airbnb upstate New York. Something is very off in upstate New York.
Something is off up there. Yes, I agree.
First of all, we've come across a lot, like a lot of, you know, like the two sisters who founded spiritualism, the guy who founded the Adventist movement, upstate New York, all of them. And I'm like, something's there. But, you know, like we, like crossing the border into this town that we were staying in for a wedding, immediately I was like, nope, I don't like it here. Don't like the vibes. And then woke up in the middle of the night. I was sharing the bed with my friends. Like, I wasn't alone. But I saw, like a girl, like a shadow figure, whatever, girl kind of, like, sitting up. It's just very weird stuff. And then the day we were leaving the place we were staying, the light in the room – I was alone in the room, and the light just started going off and on. And everybody was like, you know, we have to go now. Like, we're out. I just feel like some – I don't know. I don't know what it is about that area.
Maybe I love
it's
it.
A portal, but – Well, yeah, obviously it's like it's so beautiful and like, you know, rich in history and whatever, but the vibes, they're always off. So I think if I was like actively thinking about being in upstate New York, I think I might have been spooked. The blood-curdling scream, I had that happen to me. It was a fox. Like apparently like the winter mating call of foxes sounds like a woman screaming. I thought some woman was like in the middle of our street.
I'm going to go with that.
So. Yeah, that's what I would say.
Yeah.
And it's very possible that he wouldn't have been able to see the fox in the dark. I could see the fox was literally right outside our house because we have streetlights. So, but if you're like staying kind of in like a wooded area.
So we heard a fox having sex?
No, just like a mating cry.
Oh, okay.
So, but maybe like look that up on YouTube, get like an example of it and play it for Charles and be like, is this what you heard?
Oh my god.
That
but
or,
otherwise
aren't there also those
creepy.
Like little animals, what do they call? Fisher cats. They have a horrible screaming.
Yeah, they might. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What's hot to a fox is horrifying to us. Yeah.
Well, it was like it was so distinctly like I heard the word help. Like it's such a weird sound. So
oh no.
But that's then you funny, find out, though. Like, it's actually this really natural phenomenon. You're like, oh, right, okay, right, whatever. Right. But, I mean, how often do you hear a fox yelling like that? Like, so
– Literally never.
Yeah, so I wouldn't be surprised if a lot of people are like, oh, I had no idea or whatever. Or would have had the same experience being like, oh, I heard somebody literally screaming. But, yeah, I mean, I also think just, like, staying somewhere where you're unfamiliar. I don't like that the door you were able to bust in. I hate an old latch – door.
Oh, I put like a sofa against it. I rearranged.
Yeah, that kind of thing bothers me a lot. But that's a different type of scared, you know?
Yeah. So between the two of you, who gets more spooked or like scared easily?
I feel like I put myself in situations. It's me. It's an easy me. I'm also just like such an anxious person. I'm very afraid of, but I like to be scared. Okay. I enjoy it. And because I think I like to investigate why I am and then work through those things through exposure therapy. Oh,
so mature because I am not. I'm anxious and scared, but I hate it.
I was going to say, I feel like my fear is more of just like a generalized anxiety that's just always there versus like spikes of like really being freaked out. I also feel like just sometimes when we'll be going through, you know, describing a crime scene and I'm like, in what color was the body at that time? Like, I will just get too into it. Like, but I'm also very squeamish. I think sometimes I really think I'm breaking the case. Like, I think that I can get to the bottom of something and I forget, you know, just where I am and what we're doing. And I just am like not, I guess I'm able to kind of like remove myself a little bit. But then other times you're looking through, you know, you stumble on a crime scene photo you weren't meaning to go look at and you're like, oh man, that didn't.
I think that's the other thing that's really important for us too is like, these are all mostly tragedies. More than being scary, they're honestly just really heartbreaking. And I think there's most of the time too, they're all really preventable crimes. And some of them are just about like sadists committing horrible acts. And so I think for us too, like understanding how someone could do that is the scariest thing for me.
Definitely.
And trying to bring honor back to the victims is something that is really important to our show. So as much as we can go off the rails, kind of like joke, making fun of ourselves and being self-deprecating about like how easily we scare, we're also like talking about pretty serious content. Yeah. So it's a hard balance, but I think also an essential one because sometimes too, humor can help you discuss things in ways that otherwise they would be unmentionable. So,
right.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Can be a tool.
I wanted to ask about sort of the mental health aspect of working on the show, but I guess I want to do a two-parter because I don't want to get too much into the, like, you know, like the scary, like, ghosts, because based on what you just said too, but I am curious because I listened to the episode, the Conjuring House episode, and y'all mentioned how Joey King, when she was working on the Conjuring movie, like, had this sort of sickness that she had, and then once she stopped working on the movie, like, it completely went away. Like, have y'all ever had any experiences while reporting on these houses too that have, like, really affected you?
Yeah.
I had two kidney stones in August. That was not fun, but, like, that had nothing to do with Dark House. I mean, Hadley, do you have a specific example of, like, an ailment?
Yeah, I was having weird, I mean, I have really intense nightmares. And I think I always have since I was a really little kid. Mm-hmm. And I think, obviously, surrounding myself with this content, I get more they're more gory, and then they're also just more prevalent. They're more regular. I can have multiple in one night. And so when that starts to happen, I, like, check in with myself and maybe slow down on some of it and pay attention to what time of the day I'm doing my research, because also, like, understanding the details I do think is essential if you're going to tell the full story. I don't often include all of the details because I actually don't think – but you don't know that you don't need to include all of them until you have all of the facts. So you kind of have to, like, as a storyteller, pick and choose what is essential and then what is kind of just sensationalizing it, or glamorizing it in some cases. But in terms of, like, nightmares I've had, there were a lot of bisection nightmares I was having. And in one of the episodes we were working on, somebody was horribly mutilated. And so that was impacting me a lot. And I had to be really careful. I turned on like a safe search filter on my computer and on my phone, which I've kept on now. So sometimes it's annoying because it'll filter out things that I actually do need to see when I'm, like, searching for, like, a makeup tutorial or something, because it is better safe than sorry. But that was really helpful. And then also, like, huge believer in therapy and talking through things that are upsetting. I personally also just know my boundaries. And so somebody might listen to that and be really, like, traumatized by it. I am not. I can discuss these things in a way that I think helps me process things that have happened in my own life. And I think for other people, it makes them relive horrible things, or it gives them, like, a new fear that they wouldn't have had otherwise, that they don't, that's not serving them. So I think also just being aware of your boundaries and, like, having a good support system is the key to pretty much everything. But especially if you're working in an industry where it's not easy to separate, your personal life from, like, those more upsetting topics.
Definitely.
Yeah. That's,
I think on that note of, like, boundaries too, similar but different, I especially with, like, in the pandemic, because we started the show in the pandemic, work from home, and I'm a super homebody, so I enjoy it, but also what working from home did for me, or to me, is that, like, I don't really know when to stop. I always
get outside, go for a walk.
Like, I go to bed very late anyways, so there's not usually anything stopping me from working until, like, 9, 10, 11, and so I was trying this year, like, every night before bed to, like, force myself to read a chapter of, admittedly, Hermione fan fiction of all things, which is Draco and Hermione, whatever. not because I didn't want to go to bed, with, like any scary imagery, but more so I just wanted to, like, a palate cleanse, because I'm somebody who will get in bed and my brain will keep spiraling and I'll keep thinking of things I want to Google. And it's, like, first and foremost, it's not good for me to have tabs open on my phone Safari. Like, if I'm going to do my research, it needs to all just be on my computer, like, whatever. So then remembering to, like, oh, I got to go AirDrop all these tabs. Like, that is just an annoying thing for me. And I'm like, no, don't open new tabs here. Like, leave that to your laptop. But also just, like, I'll never get to sleep if I'm just constantly spiraling, thinking of these other things I want to Google. And with these types of stories and the research that we do, so easy to fall down a rabbit hole, like, digging and digging and trying to find an answer to somebody, or, you know, a date of when something happened. And, like, a lot of times it's just, like, useless, and you're not going to even end up including it in the story anyways. So I think kind of setting those self boundaries and just making sure that we cut ourselves off at a certain time and don't allow our brains to just, like, go down crazy rabbit holes.
My problem is that my palate cleanser is, like, a book about Ted Bundy, and then I'm in bed being, like, on a Reddit thread about, like, something that I don't need to be reading. And I'm always, like, so tired. Like, this morning I opened up my phone and I was like, I guess I'd Googled this last night and just totally forgot because it was, like, midnight. signs of a sociopath. Like, I don't, all of these different things that I shouldn't be Googling that. I need to be better at it.
And it's always Reddit. Like, it's always looking at Reddit because I'm the same. Yeah.
As soon as I find myself on Reddit, I'm like, X out, we're done, phone away, like, no more. Oh my gosh. And so I feel like it's tough to ask this because it's like picking a favorite child, but is there an episode that really jumps out at you that was a favorite or was extremely difficult to work through or was like your scariest episode that you, you know, felt an attachment to?
It is impossible to pick a favorite. And I feel like it depends like what angle you're coming at it from, right? Like, oh, the one that scared me the most or whatever. I would say this season, the one that's really stood out to me just came out. When did it come out? Last week? No, two weeks ago. It's called the Lucy Murder House. It's this historic home in Uniontown, Alabama. It's completely abandoned now. But in the early 90s, these guys were renovating it and they found the remains of a 13-year-old boy buried under the front porch. And it's incredibly sad and dark in that way, but it's also one of the most compelling stories I think we've really covered. And then there's this additional layer to it of like the house isn't abandoned because it's haunted or anything like that. It's abandoned because the whole town is just, they've been experiencing environmental injustice and environmental racism for decades. So, that was kind of like this note that we're ending on. But also it's like it all begins too back with agriculture and slavery and the Civil War. And so that for me, that one really affected my mental health on multiple levels. First of all, because it's in a more obscure story. So I went way deep down the rabbit hole trying to figure out like who were these original owners? Because that information wasn't easily accessible. Then I'm like, you know, literally 11 p.m. reading through archive newspapers about this little boy's funeral weeping. And then you're kind of like figuring out how to tackle, you know, how do we convey the seriousness of what's going on with, like they said, the environmental injustice. And like, you know, I was never good at science. Mm-hmm. And so those kinds of things, wanting to make sure that I'm accurately explaining it, but also not plagiarizing, but also really getting to the point here and like not dumbing it down, but digesting it or regurgitating it in a way that anybody else who doesn't really understand science or doesn't know as much about climate change as they would like to, in a way that we can all kind of understand what's going on there. So that one, there was just like a lot of different elements to that one of, but I also felt this real pressure of like, you have to get this story right. Mm-hmm. And so I think a lot of my mental health issues with the show aren't necessarily about being scared or even like the heaviness, heavy topics we read about. It's like I put a lot of pressure on myself when it comes to getting the, you know, the arc and the narrative down going into the recording because it's so much easier to get it down beforehand than to have to fix it after the fact in post. Mm-hmm. And I also just like it kind of stems from childhood again, like issues with procrastination and struggling to write like long form. And so I feel like I had a hard time this year just like agonizing over my episodes and over the narrative and making sure everything was like really pieced together perfectly. It all works out in the end, but there were moments where I was like, am I cut out for a job that requires me to be, you know, writing 20 to 30 pages worth of notes for each episode? And I think, you know, you just got to battle the demons. And in this case, it's self-doubt, you know, because I'm glad that.
You are cut out for it.
Yeah. And I'm glad that I like, you know, toughed it out, whatever it is. And, you know, now the episodes are out and everybody gets to enjoy the story. But that episode stood out to me a lot.
Yeah.
And I mean, Hadley, which one would you say?
I was just going to say, like, instead of calling out one favorite episode, I'll just share what my favorite thing about each episode is. Not going into every episode, don't worry. But I really enjoy the historical element that we dive into in our research phases. I was a narrative studies major in college, which I think was unique to the school I was at. But basically, it adopted – or you were allowed to kind of design your own version of the major by being interdisciplinary. So you can really heavily focus on like screenplay writing, creative writing, poetry, or you could more heavily take courses in the American Studies program, which was it's basically a lot like American history, if people aren't familiar with it. So I really enjoyed American studies a lot as a student. And so being able to kind of take out my old notes and then look up all of the different articles and readers that I would use and dip back into those for each episode, because we always try to contextualize the stories within the specific space that they're unfolding in, not just the home, but who are these people in these communities? What patterns were playing out while they were alive, and what are they like now? How has it changed? How has that informed the stories? And so in each episode, I get to kind of, we're just constantly learning. And I've always really valued that. You said earlier on, Patty, something about curiosity. And I think that's probably one of the, like, one of my, the qualities that I lead with, I think. And so when I'm when I'm researching an episode about San Francisco, I'll learn about, you know, what it was like in the, like, in like year 1000 AD or something. And that's very far back. Clearly I'm having a hard time like imagining what that is, but I also get to do the same thing for San Antonio, Texas, or upstate New York, which we've discussed, Rhode Island, Alyssa has taken us to. So getting to go to all these different places, not always physically, but in terms of being able to research them, I think is my favorite element of each episode. And it always for me unlocks like, oh, that's why they're seeing that kind of ghost in this space, even if they're not realizing that there's this connection to it. So I think that's my favorite thing. And each episode is so different. There are some that are about, that are really heavily true crime focused. Mm-hmm. And then there's others that are really fun for me because the ghost stories are funny and they're weird. And you're like, how did this become such a popular legend? I'm confused. And kind of retracing those steps is interesting. So we just put out an episode recently called Victoria's Black Swan Inn, which was my version of that, I think. It was a little lighter hearted. Of course, there were some elements of it that weren't. We talked about the Alamo and what that means for Texas identity and identity formation and things like that. But we also talked about these like odd ghost stories and really creepy ones, and then got to research people who were more obscure. So they aren't necessarily famous, you know, it's not the president's house. We're not talking about like Abraham Lincoln's ghost. We're talking about this random woman who I don't think would have otherwise had a platform for her name to even be mentioned. So I think that might be my favorite part, but all of the episodes are our favorites, I would say.
Yeah, I mean,
they're all like, right when we put them out, we're like, I think this is my best one yet. And then lo and behold,
that's how it should be. And each episode, it's an iceberg, truly. You know, we get to enjoy it all tied together and curated, but you guys are doing, I'm sure, hours and hours of research, and so much like physical energy, emotional energy is expended on each episode. So again, I really applaud the both of you, and it sounds like you really take care to, like you said, honor the lives of the people that you're talking about. And I think that that's remarkable. It's no easy feat. It is a huge responsibility. And I really do. I'm just so blown away by the both of you. That's really amazing. So please give yourselves a pat on the back. And I think you guys both deserve a raise. I'll just say that. But yeah, whatever.
That's, say it louder.
Yeah, I will. Honey, as a former Hearst student, no, I'll cut that up. But, no, truly, you guys have amazing. I want to wrap it up with one really rapid fire question. You move into a haunted house and you're seeing a lot of spooky things, a lot of things that shouldn't be happening. What do you do? Yeah. Do you move out or do you stay?
That's like, oh, it's such a loaded. I'm like, rapid fire. No, I could talk about this for like a good 20 minutes. Cause I'm like, well, if it's, you know, I think about the house as like Practical Magic House, which by the way was like a set built, and then they took it down as soon as the movie was done filming. Like, so that house doesn't exist. I'm like, well, if it was my dream Practical Magic House, maybe I'd duke it out with these spirits because I want that house. But if it's a house that I'm like, you know what, I don't need to be here. So I think it depends on the setting. But I do think my gut reaction would be try a couple things first. Maybe get some salt out, some candles, try to just be like, what if we just shared the space? Like, what if you just called Taylor up? If this wasn't a place that I'm like married to, I think I would be fine with giving up eventually.
Totally. Mm-hmm.
This is truly my fear of ever owning a home. I'm not even kidding.
Yes,
I'm like,
I agree.
I'll just live in a one bedroom apartment for the rest of my life because I'm too scared to do anything bigger than that. But I think if there wasn't a lot at stake financially, I would be out of there really quick, mm-hmm. or just get a really good therapist and convince myself it's in my head. And then like, if they are spirits, they're really nice ones. And then otherwise, like, they don't exist.
Yeah, and that's the thing.
I mean, you know, then like, if they start tormenting me, it's a different question. But
yeah,
that
if
never
they're
happens.
Being, you know, obviously spooky, but not nefarious, then yeah. maybe we could, you know, you could make up stories about them. You know, kind
if
of
if they're
just...
like making me homicidal, then we have a problem. But yeah, totally. Then you gotta that's go. My fear is that they like get inside of your head because yeah. I always feel like that happens in those haunting series, Haunting of Hill House, and all yeah. of those. It's always like the matriarch of the family somehow. Gets possessed. Ugh, I don't know.
Yeah.
I hope totally. That never happens. I'll call you guys if it does and you yes. have to move in with me so we're in it together.
Yes. Yes.
Totally. No, I'm with you. I get freaked out. Like the shining of it all. Like that's the exactly. part that I'm like, no, I don't want to like, do anything bad.
I know.
Well, awesome. This has been so wonderful having you both here. I am already obsessed with Dark House, but I feel like talking to you both and getting sort of more context behind your stories behind it too. It's just going to make me appreciate it even more. So I'm excited to literally once we hang up, I'm continue listening to the Taylor yeah. Swift episode.
Well, but thank is there you. Anything... It's mutual.
Yeah,
we feel the same
you.
About you guys.
I, of course, the podcast, but where can people find you? Is there anything else you'd like to promote? Would love to open the space for you both to share.
Yeah, well, like we said, you can follow Dark House on Instagram at Dark House Podcast. If you want to see any of our rogue bonus content on TikTok, we're also at Dark House Podcast there. I think like TikTok and Instagram for our personals are just surnames. So mine's just at Alyssa Fiorentino.
And I'm Hadley Mendelson.
Amazing. Thank you both so
thank
much.
Thank you guys. This
thank
was really
you.
Fun.
Yes. Yeah.
And have a great spooky season to all.
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you all for joining us for another episode of The Relationship Type. If you like this episode, you can follow us on Spotify, follow us where you listen to podcasts, follow us on Instagram at The Relationship Type, and leave us a review. Our editing is done by Dylan Simon. Our design is by John Francis. Our music comes from purple-planet.com. The Relationship Type is created by me, Alex Piscatelli, and my co-host, Patty Camerata. Thanks for tuning in. We'll gab with you next time.